Welcome to Obuleti Oromo Women's Network monthly webinar and podcast. Our conversations are based on topics and issues that are prevalent in the Oromo community, especially pertaining to women. The podcasts are based on recorded monthly webinars led by leaders in our community. These podcasts are meant to attend to the education component of Obuleti's mission. If you're interested in learning more, please contact us via our website, email, and or social media networks. Webinar resources can be found on our website at obuleti.org/webinars. Thank you all for joining our webinar for today. We greatly appreciate you all. Today, our discussion is mainly on politics. And the lack of female representation in the political realm, and what we as Oromo women can do either to be more represented or to make our voices be heard in the political arena. And so today we have Najat Hamza, who lives in Minnesota, who works a lot with the political parties or the issues surrounding Oromo struggles, I guess, for lack of a better word. And she does a lot of work, and so we were hoping to hear her experiences as well as any advice that she might have for us, but mostly her experiences in politics and ways that we can continue to persevere and be involved in the political arena. So I'll give Najat the opportunity to introduce herself a little bit and talk about who she is, and then she'll dive further in.
All right. As you already beautifully introduced me, my name is Najat Hamza, and I was born in the Haramgi region, specifically in from Dure. Did leave home pretty at the tender age, probably before most of you are born. My experiences are more so outside of Oromia. However, those early years have shaped the way I see myself as an Oromo woman and what happens into my country and my people. So with that said, I did grow up here mostly in Minnesota, but I come from a family, certain legacies when it comes to following the Oromo struggle. And so that's why it's very deeply ingrained in who I am. And that's how you find me in this arena at this specific time. However, I have never thought of myself as a politician, nor do I see myself as such today. But like many Oromos, I see what happens from day to day to these people. And you feel a sense of responsibility by being from the same people that are suffering day to day, and then you feel like I should jump in and do something, whatever that thing is. And so that's how I put myself in this situation where if there is a leaf I can turn, and I have a belief that it could make a tiny bit of a difference, and that's how I jump on it and try to make things happen. That's a bit difficult when it comes to gender issues, and that's probably something we're going to talk about, throughout the webinar and whatnot. It's a little bit difficult to achieve those smaller tasks in a bigger arena where your voice or your presence is a little bit of a challenge at times. Then it becomes like a horizontal struggle as well as a vertical one, trying to, create change or be part of change that can affect our home country and the people that live in it positively. And so to say a little bit about my drive is basically intrinsic. I have no ambition politically, personally. It's just a matter of, I guess, as I stated prior, a sense of responsibility to where you come from and to the people that you come from, that they should deserve some sort of a human decency. Like a basic humanity of their own and their own spaces and languages and cultures and whatnot. And so that's where it comes from. So I don't really have like a personal agenda per se, or did I ever think of myself as, gee, when I grow up someday, I'm going to be, you know, engulfed in a day-to-day struggle of my people all the way across, from across the Atlantic. So that's where I'm at. And to kind of think of my experiences in this little years that I've invested going, you know, places, doing things, being involved in activities, trying to make a difference all the way from here, there is a lot that a woman can encounter. So when I say this, to even be present in those arenas, sometimes it's very isolating, it's very lonely, but we always remind ourselves of why you were there in the first place. So I always dismiss that feeling that, oh, Najat, it's not about you. It's about you being here and contributing towards this bigger goal that we all dream about. So that's how we keep that resiliency piece, that perseverance piece with you at all times. Otherwise, it becomes a struggle for you to struggle for the people. When I say that, it's like for you to show up with the skill sets that you have, with whatever contribution you think you can give to the struggle, and also fight, you know, vertically for that to have a stage of its own, its authentic voice, it becomes a struggle on its own. And sometimes it's a bit much, as I said, but that's why it's called a struggle. I guess it's not only a one-way street. It is sometimes, you know, it hits the different stratas of our culture and how it's structured and how that either allows for or hinders certain progresses to go forward. To hit another point is this, whenever we demand a certain space to be heard, to be represented fully, you get a certain resistance, citing culture or either, you know, downloaded Western feminism ideas because we are a little bit too aggressive or what have you. But yeah, that's... so that's what we push back on, but only in a more structured manner, because even if we go to the Gada system, the way our societies were made prior to colonization, women have a very big, you know, presence in the political arena. The CK institution to be one example, even if I'm not an expert, I know that it existed. And so we can tap into that and bring back the whole idea of inclusiveness as a means to be a whole, like, you know, a whole society encompasses all and not only one side of the humanity. And so we try to come back with that, but at the same time, these structures are so ingrained in our society to the point where it's like sometimes it's like hitting a brick wall. So it's very hard to verbalize it without stepping on those time bombs of culture, tradition. Oh no, you know, if you bring this idea, this will take out the other, and we're not being true to ourselves as an Oromo woman, and yada yada, and it goes on and on. To that, I always refer back to, you know, the whole idea of intersectionality theory, because that maybe was coined for a different set of examples, but we can own it as a normal woman and what it means for us. When I say that, we have culture, we have various religion, we have family expectations and the way, you know, we are conditioned to be a certain way or not to be a certain way in a given family as well. So taking all of that into effect, what does it mean to be an Oromo woman who has her own voice and space? So that's what I struggle with, and that's how I try to answer those questions that come from direction of culture, religion, and this and that, and see how, you know, that could be a collective answer to those critical voices that only come about whenever you're demanding more space, more presentation, more authenticity from your own. And so that that's basically where it's at. And the second part is the whole liberation first and then woman's liberation later idea. So we don't have time as an Oromo or people to entertain the equality of women in the struggle towards freedom. And so that is, if not number one, at least the number two go-to answer whenever you demand, you know, your space be respected, your voice be respected, and for you to represent who you are as an Oromo woman in a political arena. And so for that one, I can say liberation is not possible until all of us are liberated, and that includes women. In fact, that's the bigger portion of the society. So a very well-built society is a society that is strong in their women and in their youth, and because those are the two integral parts of any given society and the strengths in which it's measured, you know, its successes. So I don't see why one has to be in exclusion of the other. I actually think it's more beneficial if we can go about those things, you know, simultaneously, answering women's equality issues, as well as, you know, realizing our dreams of, you know, having a liberated country and liberated people. And so, so these two major parts, Western versus our culture, and how does that fit in the feminism framework versus is liberation now and women issues later or together. And those are the two major themes that I have encountered in my small time, you know, while I'm involved in this arena. And as I said, it depends on who you talk to, it depends on who is framing that for you to either see it one way or the other. Of course, most of us who are in this place see it the way I see it. We can say simultaneously, we can do this. In fact, if we answer the woman's issues within the liberation struggle, it might even accelerate it or make it be for the better or what have you. And so that's where we're at. And, you know, so that's how I would sum up my experience in general. And if you, any of you have a question, maybe we can go at it. I feel like I'm just going on forever. So maybe we can make it be, you guys can ask me questions from now on and see if I could answer it in a way that makes sense.
The question I had for you was what has been, so I mean, in observing kind of the politics, for example, the recent attendance of the Prime Minister being in Minnesota, we noticed that, you know, the people who are able to speak, who are able to be seen, were mostly men, although the work that has been put in has been equally, if not maybe more, by women, in terms of getting our voices out there, in terms of writing letters instead of in terms of writing the politicians or whatever the case might be. It's been women, it's been us organizing. So for you, what did it mean to how did that feel for you not to be represented or for you not to be welcome to that presentation?
I guess that one is a devil's sword question, because I actually made a personal decision. I was there for a different agenda because, as you know, my region has been hit with violence and is continuing to be hit with violence. And I was there to be the voice for those people. And I did work behind the scenes to get my people ready to voice their concerns to the Prime Minister and what have you. So that was my role that I put myself in. And I think that was carried out okay. And I was also there being the silent observer as a choice. With that said, however, I know that one of our very own, a person that is near and dear to my heart, a person that works super hard and usually doesn't get the highlight that she deserves, Amane Barasso was part of the organizing committee. I know that she did an amazing job to pull all of these things together. I was excited for a minute when she was there, when they came out onto the stage, that she might, you know, utter a word or two and get us all excited. And that didn't happen. That included, by the way, the wife of the Prime Minister also. She has never uttered a word, not that I know of anyway, since California, DC, or here in Minnesota. And so that was a disappointment in my part. However, my choices were done so because I wanted it to be that way. I was there at the dinner too, listening in, as I said, but I had a different mission in mind. I wanted to get my community from the Harrogate region ready to go and ask some hard questions as to why this region was still being hit with day-to-day violence and why things are not being done to stop these things. And so I wasn't really there per se to have my own kind of a space in that regard. And so with that, I wouldn't think of it as an exclusion. I did participate as a one individual to answer a different answer, which was, in all honesty, that Monday I came out to show my colors and to represent my community in general. So the visit is great. We have great respect for the Prime Minister and his team. However, what drove me that Monday morning was more of what the exclusion of Oromo people that happened in DC and California, and as an answer to that, to show our solidarity to our communities worldwide in the diaspora, and also the kids who were a bit disappointed with what went on in those two cities. So that was what I was there for, and I feel like we have achieved that tremendously as a community, and I'm proud of that day and to be part of that small part. And for the nighttime, as I said, I have worked behind the scene, like you mentioned, to get those people ready. All of us talked about it, held many, you know, meetings to voice our concern as a community from that specific area, and I think they carried that out beautifully. So to me, the way I see myself is that whether I had the stage to speak or not, I wanted the issues to be present and front and center, and to be confronted with, you know, by the team that's, you know, visiting us here. And I think they did raise that concern. Many of the questions that I wanted to be put to the Prime Minister and his team was, you know, done. So I felt like what I was there to do was, you know, done as a team belonging to that group of people. But to answer your question specifically, why those women who had a direct involvement putting those two, those things together from day one didn't have a voice is, of course, as we all know it, it is what it is, practically because maybe they are women. Maybe they didn't even, sometimes we internalize our own exclusion also. And so I don't really know what happened, but I know I was being a little bit disappointed looking from the podium when she came out with them, Amani, I mean, and didn't say a word, and everybody else kind of, you know, did what they usually do, and things got, you know, it ended. And so that was a disappointment for me. But as for myself, no, I had a different mission and different things that I had in mind, and I think that was executed, and that was the role I was playing.
A question that was posed by Amane, actually, her question was, should we move from asking for more spaces to creating the spaces ourselves, and what do you think that looks like?
That looks like you and me, Amani, and many other colors of our women who have a lot to give, a lot to say, and a lot to accomplish. And we are, as an Oromo woman, here's what I'm proud of. We don't really care about whether we get the credit or not, speaking personally or otherwise, collectively as well. So like, when you want something done, give it to women in general, but an Oromo woman, we work for that intrinsic value, that dream in the distance, and whatever we can do to get it closer to that. So that's the value that any woman that I have ever met in this realm or otherwise carries with her, as opposed to our counterparts who would leave a, you know, like would move a leaf and then want a recognition or a handshake or whatever else for that small task. And maybe we should be able to say, you know what, I have done this and this for my, you know, community, and I deserve the credit. And we feel like that's too much to ask, or either, you know, maybe we feel like, oh no, this is just a small task, so we dismiss our own contributions or each other's contributions for that matter in that way. And so even if we create that space, as long as we don't own up to what we contribute and how much it has you know, like how much bearing it has on what happens, and take credit for that. Have a spine and say, you know what, I did contribute to this and I deserve X, Y, and Z. And that continues to be maybe our own internal repressive thing that it goes into that, because we don't see what we do as that much of an importance that we claim credit for it. And maybe that needs to change. And with the other thing, we shouldn't ask for space. We should just take it. And if that inconvenience certain people, then it is what it is. And then the second tier would be what she suggested. If we make our own spaces, how or what that space looks like depends on the vision that we have. What do we want? Like, how do we define this wall? How does it work with our different communities and, you know, what have you, that have a different roles? And, you know, how does that work with all of it? So we have to come up with a framework that doesn't disturb the water per se, but delivers the space that everybody feels included in, and where we could all come together in a way that we can build each other and not, like, I don't know, minimize our own roles. Personally to ourselves and then to others like us.
You talked a lot about, or a little bit about, liberation first, and then women's liberation being second. And so I'm wondering, what does it look like for it to happen simultaneously? What do we need to do to have those things go hand in hand, and to force, I guess, our men or our political leaders to hear our voice?
I guess here's the thing. The funny thing about liberation is that it's not an isolated incident. You know, a country doesn't exist without a society, and a society does not exist without women. So those things are already intrinsically connected. So the fact that we're trying to even, like, see it differently is an issue. So to frame it, be like, if you are fighting for liberation of your country, that should include every strata of your society, specifically those who are, you know, the pillars of that society, which is mostly women. So in that regard, if you are building as you go, you know, the equality of women in political arena, in the, you know, any part of the society, education, access to, you know, what do you call it, power, representation, and what have you, you're going to come up with a more accelerated way of, you know, nation building later, even after liberation, because you can't do that with a half of the society. Whether we like it or not, women and men see the world differently, and we function a little bit differently, and not one is less than the other. It's just that we have a different way of solving problems and looking at the world. And so we can utilize both of those views if we are going simultaneously side by side, and come up, maybe accelerate the process of liberation to begin with. And here's another thing. When we are excluding liberation of the country now and then liberation of women later, we are already involved in the struggle for liberation. Women are equally, in, you know, contributing in that regard. So why should they fight for a country idea, the idea of freedom of a country that doesn't give them what they fought for? You know what I mean? Like, so it's very hard to try to divorce those two ideas apart to begin with. I just think that it's a lazy way of not wanting to get into that intricate part and not wanting to answer that specific question that is already, you know, entangled with the liberation process in the first place. Because if you look at the Oromo liberation armies from the beginning to now, or in the political arena, in advocacy, in, I don't know, raising children that their fathers have left to fight for freedom, all these things require all sides of the community as whole, and the youth and the women and the elderly and the men. So all of this is involved in that liberation process. So to say to one group that this liberation process, however great it might be for the country, yours is not going to be answered within that is an absurd idea. So maybe before we demand that we should be given that simultaneous go at it, we should actually frame it in a way that they're already one and the same. It's just a matter of looking at it for what it is. And it helps the liberation process go further, and it also helps in the nation building. It helps in representation within the society. It helps in so many different ways. So it's not going to undercut it. It actually will help it. So it's just a matter of how we look at it, really. And the only reason why we are even having this discussion, whether or not liberation for women should happen simultaneously with the liberation of a country, is that patriarchy itself is resistant to the idea of women's equality. And so that's the only reason why we're even, you know, seeing it as two different things. So if we get rid of that frame of mind for a little bit, it's really absurd to try to, you know, pick apart those two, you know, ideas, because they're not two. They're just one big part. It just need to go a little bit on the horizontal side. And as you go forward, you know, to liberating the country. And that's how it should be framed anyway. That's how I see it.
Thank you all. I think I know only Najat, just face by face or by voice. And I'm I came in to all Oromo case after Irecha. And my experience is not so tangible like you all, but I'm working in a government house in Sweden, so I know how all kind of politics goes on and works, deeds and everything. And so using my knowledge and my experience at work in rural development areas, so I try to engage myself and to come into the system where I try to highlight my voice about our people and our, especially our farmers. You know, I am a farmer, so I'm but still what I saw from the very beginning, what I just realized, that our women are not so strong enough to go forward. And nobody can tell you to go forward unless you yourself just push it on. Because I have a very life experience. Most of you are, I think, maybe some of you my daughters, or some of you maybe my little sisters. And so I know how we raised, you know, during a time where anyone can get something, but of course, depending on families, you have a right, a possibility to be hard enough to, you know, to broke on everything. So for me to talk with women, men, it won't be very different, and just to come into there to the border line. So my suggestion to all is that everybody should come in without fear, and nobody will tell you that you can get this or that, but you have to claim it. And I see Najat is so strong enough to come in, and I'm very thankful to hear how it went during this Minnesota meeting last time. And even I wrote as a comment why women were in the display area, you know, just culture, but why not talking, why not saying something? I think I commented on that day. But still, you have to push on. And I'm not at all familiar to political works, but life is politics. And when you talk about farmers, it's politics. And let's make a difference. And I would love to work with all of you. And especially when it comes to gathering of knowledge and disseminating it. And we, as a woman, we know that we are a very capable of working simultaneous questions at once. We don't afraid, isn't it, Najat? I think yeah. So. I think you have to push it on, and anytime you want to have something, so just keep it on. And I know I have given my ideas, a lot of things, to a man who have already went on its own projects. And it is sad that I didn't give to you as a woman, but I have a lot to give, because I have a lot of experiences from social aspect, from every idea. So thank you very much for having me in this stage. And
thank you, Asna.
Thank you, Asna. Did you have a specific question for her?
What is your plan now? Because I see a lot of people are returning back. I don't know what they have in their hands, and I don't know what is waiting for them there. And I have still doubt of a lot of things, but what is your plan then? How are you going to go further as a woman and as having all of us together?
Okay. Thank you. And for the whole going back home thing, I am a very, very skeptical about things that go further as much as I'm hopeful. And for that, I say time will tell. But for other things, I have always had a passion for women's issues, building a woman from, you know, like her youth, and maybe in a foundation type of a deal, I want to, if I ever return to my home country, I want to give, you know, the little kids who have no backing socially, financially, or structurally, or otherwise, some sort of a frame where they can exist in, further their education, support them socially, and kind of a drop in an ocean type of a scenario. But that's where I feel like I'm more, capable of. If I can transform a life or two, and that life can go ahead and, you know, do something for the nation, for Africa, for the world, I don't know. But that is where my idea is. And the other is personal goals. I have stopped my education from furthering over. So probably going back to that, since last year, I've been, you know, situating myself in a way that is possible for me. So we'll be joining you soon in the scientific community, which is where my heart is at. But whenever I think of our country, I think of whatever turmoil is going on right now. As much as I'm hopeful, I'm also skeptical of many things. And I hope those things come to pass, and that this mania of positivity can actually transform into an actual thing on the ground that can transform the people of these, you know, the lives of these people, not the political elites or people returning from where we are in the Western countries or what have you, but more of the everyday Oromian or Ethiopian people who, you know, had it rough this whole time. And if that can translate all the way to the bottom, for me, I feel like me returning home as an individual, not returning home, shouldn't matter. Because what we fought for is these people should lead some sort of a decent life where they can go freely, express themselves. Upward mobility is possible. You're not getting targeted because of your identity or the political ideas you hold, or that you can grow crops on your land and you are not going to be threatened by some pseudo-developmental ideas that are there to just, you know, kill you off of your land or what have you. So these are the values that I thought I fought for in however small ways I contributed. So if these things can translate and answer these concerns for the everyday citizens of that country, for me, that is a satisfaction. Personally, I can do one or two things, but that isn't about you or me or any one of us either staying here or returning home. The true success of whatever transformation is going on is going to be seeing how it transforms the everyday people of that country, the ones that cannot, you know, afford to feed themselves a daily meal or, you know, to just even exist in peace. And so, as I said, I go back to my region. Look at what's happening in the Arerge region all over the place. People in that place haven't had a day or even a 24 hours where no life had been lost, even after the amazing transformation has started in that country. So for me, I am hopeful and I'm also skeptical of what is going on. And so that's where I am as a person. If things come to pass and things, you know, turn for the better, I am glad and happy for that. But we also can't be complacent just because so much positivity or here and there things are happening. We shouldn't neglect keeping people accountable to their words and to what they said they're going to do, or to see if these actual changes are something practical. And so that's what I head after. As an individual, to be honest, most of us have lived outside of that country more than I have lived on it. And so to me, my return absolutely bears no significance other than maybe, as I said, like, you know, have some sort of a foundation where I can help X number of people, or maybe call attention to my immediate area where I was born and raised, or, you know, like small effects, or maybe a dollar a day, as Dr. Abi said, you know, he had that trust fund set up, something similar, but more, you know, that you have a control over for your area. So there is a lot we can do from being from the diaspora, the skill sets we learn from various countries, the things that we have seen that works in our, you know, second homes or what have you. So we can take those experiences and try to give it to the people on the ground. So in hopes that it can help their lives for the better. But to me, it shouldn't attach, what do you call it, like people returning from home. It isn't about you winning or losing. It's not about your homecoming or what have you. It is about what can I do to make the lives of those people better. And so that's how I see it. And so to me, whether I do that sitting in Minnesota or I'm sitting in Jedoa, my home city, it makes no difference. But what we cannot and should not absolutely do is to just say, oh, look, X, Y, and Z has happened. We should just let them be and let them figure it out. That is never worked. Even in the society that I live in here in the United States, the democratic system is well over, what is it, close to 300 or over 300 years. But what happens, activism still exists. Governments still should be held accountable. Programs are being proposed or cut, depending on whether they harm or help the society. So the whole notion of just because a certain reform is going on, that we should just completely let go of, you know, making people accountable or voicing yourself, like, you know, using your voice and say, hey, why is this happening in this area, is, you know, to mute that is actually undermining that reform to come to pass. So to me, the best thing we can do is what we always have done, which is advocate for the people, hold people accountable. Even if they're doing wonderful, they can do better. There's always something that could, you know, be done better, and focus our attention on the day-to-day people of that country. And so that's where I am. Personally, as I said, my goals shouldn't matter when it comes to that country and what I can and cannot do over there.
Hey, thank you for that answer. A question that has come to us, I think it relates to you talking about feminism earlier. Somebody asked, how do you describe Oromo feminism? And if there was... feministic resources that you wish Oromo women would either understand or view?
So for us, I don't know, I could be ignorant of that fact if there is such a thing as an Oromo feminism as a framework or a research or, I don't know, written material or anything like that. But what I do is that I have a lot of Western feminism or, you know, a Black writer like Bell Hook or many others that I read, but then I try to apply it in a way that makes sense to me as an Oromo woman I have a specific culture and religion and, you know, mannerism and what have you, and try to define those theories in a way that doesn't violate those values that are core to who we are, but at the same time, you know, allow us to have that voice that says, I am here and I have a purpose and I'm here to deliver that purpose, you know, and without having to be, you know, just taking those already framed theories of feminism as they are, because they're not going to apply to us totally. So there are always things that we can take from here and there and then define it in a way that makes sense to us. First, the whole idea of that, what I spoke about earlier, is that intersectionality is defined in a different way for, you know, a woman of color. If you take it out and then try to be within those framework as an Oromo woman, one, I'm a Muslim Oromo woman. I am from Harargue, and that also has a different, you know, sets of experiences and exposures. Not better or less, it just is, you know, because your environment also has some sort of a, you know, way that shapes your identity. And then you are raised here, and that also has some sort of flavor to as to who you are as a person. So all of these experiences in totality mean something to you. But the core thing is that as a woman, it's not only the Oromo woman that women struggle worldwide. It's just that some are far more progressed in that regard than others. And when it comes to our society, we haven't even started. Because the minute you started demanding a space and be respected and voices and all that jazz, what happens usually is that either they pull the religious card, well, even if you are Wagefana, I don't know about that because the Gather has Sikh institution and so they can refer back to that. But when it comes to Christian and Muslim Oromo woman, they can sometimes use a misconstrued meaning of our religion in a form of silencing. And so, as I said, go out there and be educated about it. Like, learn your religion, learn your culture, learn what is the normal, what isn't. If you know yourself in that regard, then people can't misuse that information in an effort to silence you. And so that's been the weapon for any oppressed group of people throughout history, is that knowledge can and define how you see yourself in the world and how you see yourself in any given various spaces, whether that is political realm, societal, call it whatever you want. So basically that's how I see myself defining that. It could mean something different from an Oromo woman from the RC region. What does that mean for you? So the thing is, Walagan, you don't go all over Oromia, and we have tidbits of shifts in culture that we have among ourselves. Even with that, if we have that general framework, you can define what it means for you to be an Oromo feminist in those contexts and not outside of it. And if we frame our argument in that way, then you make patriarchy lose the card it uses to illegitimately silence you in your quest to being a person that you need to be in this world. So that's how I see it. It's just, it's a, you know, maybe in the near future, our scholars from here, our young women who are, you know, coming from behind us, may be able to produce those things in a well-articulated framework that could be used in the future. But for me, I haven't encountered that yet, and this is how I define myself. So using an existing literature, defining it in a way that makes sense to my identity.
It is very important that when we take on kind of American literature or American concepts, that we are cautious when we're applying it to our culture, because it is dependent on the context, as you said. Mm-hmm. The next question is kind of stepping back a little bit and answering, maybe telling us a little more about your background in terms of what it has looked like, your involvement, what it's looked like in the community, or what it is specifically that you're doing to contribute to the community.
Well, I was a silent person when it comes to like the social media. Happy to say I was the first 100,000 users before most of you were born, Facebook was only a college thing. And that was when I was on. And the only thing I used my social media platform for was, you know, exchanging books between campuses, blah, blah, you know, that was it. And so the breaking point came when, was it in 2011 or 12 when that Badale Vera thing came and people were enraged and, you know, something about Mililik and our people. And that was my first time that I came out and wrote a little bit of an essay, you know, arguing against that very idea. And so that's kind of how I came onto this space. After that, I have been working as a volunteer translation versus interpreting services for advocates for human rights, for people who run away from home for political prosecution, mostly Oromo people, but sometimes the Amhara people also. And I have helped various individuals throughout the years in the last 9-10 years to help them have a say, a home in this new space. And that required a lot of document translation versus taking the person to the interview versus you know, answering some random question, how to navigate the city, where to go get help. And so that's what I was involved in deeply. And then after that, I found myself working for the Oromo community. Because I was raising my kid at the time and I needed some sort of an outlet to contribute to the society that I am from, which is here. And so I have had some work done then, and then I moved on to work for Oromia Media Network as a treasurer for a little bit, and then went back to the society that raised us, which is now I work for, you know, just a typical American company, a law firm, that is. And so my things are, there are things that I do in a straight line, and there are things that are daily, like it could be an advocacy group that's meeting informally to do X, Y, and Z, and I'll jump on that whenever I'm asked, contribute what I could. And so mostly literature producing, writing, being present, sitting in various conference calls, listening to people's ideas, bringing those ideas into practicalities, and you name it. It's really hard for me to sit here and try to remember each and every one of them, but whatever I was called on to do, I did what I could to be present, available, and also contribute in any ways that I can. And I still continue to do that, by the way. This isn't in the past. And so that's how I, I'm involved in a way. So whatever, small, big, or whatever, it's like if you are called on to contribute something, even if I don't have time, I have a hard time saying no, because I feel like it's our responsibility to respond to the calls of our people, no matter what, you know? And so that that's how I see it. And so there isn't a thing that I have said no to when it comes to our people's issue. As we speak right now, I'm working on two major, you know, projects that people have called me on to be part of. You may or may not know of it coming up soon, but in all of this, as I have stated before, that whole visibility, it doesn't exist, because most of the stuff that I'm involved in, I am behind the scene doing these things. So you never see my name on the finished product anywhere. But I know, sitting from where I am, that I have contributed for that final product to be present to the people. So that's basically who I am in that sense. And there's only few things that you can see my name next to. That's mostly my opinions on my Facebook, you know, whatever social medias that I use.
So the next question is kind of going towards concluding-ish. So we'll start kind of dying down our conversation. I know you talked about you personally working kind of in the backgrounds. And me as an up-and-coming young Oromo female, I feel that representation, like seeing other women, is something that motivates me and encourages me to kind of continue in the community and persevere regardless of the hardships or the hurdles that I'm going through. So I'm wondering what recommendations that you have for the up-and-coming generation or the younger generations in terms of how to be visible in political arenas where we are not represented, and it sometimes feels like we're not welcomed, or that our ideas or inputs are not really taken in or respected. What are some of your recommendations?
So here's a funny thing. In Oromo community or in any other community, women don't show up to board meetings, political rallies, or running for offices, or running a company by an understanding of being accepted. Don't expect that. Show up regardless. That's what I would say. And then the whole idea of being, you know, given a platform, take it. Because if you come with that frame of mind, it isn't going to happen, because the structure of patriarchy is built so that it utilizes our skills. It uses us to deliver what it wants, but it doesn't want to credit you with the work that, you know, made it happen. So basically, what I would say is be bold. I know they could say one or two things about that, like she's too frigid, or maybe a word that's too bad for the air to say, whatever the name might be. Be bold, unapologetic, show up, don't expect them to give you a seat, take it. And so it might sound aggressive and ridiculous, but that is the only way you can ensure consistent visibility. And sometimes it's okay to say, you know, not today. Like, I'm not going to fight this today. And it's good to know when to walk away from certain situations also. When I say that, sometimes the wars that we win by fighting may not be as much as your energy that it takes for you to win that war. So then maybe you can assess that situation and go, not today. Like, I'd rather do something constructive over here with the energy and the mindset that I have, and I'm not gonna fight this. So it's knowing when to push and not to push also. But other than that, I say show up, be visible, be unapologetic, be bold, but do it with knowledge and skill and confidence that you know what you're doing. Your worth is already like established, and you are not looking for validation from any number of people, whether that is male or even female. And number two, I would say that most of the othering and the breaking doesn't really happen from men. It happens from those of us who have internalized that frame of mind and turn on our own. So if you recognize something like that, reach out to that woman, reach out to her, show her for what it is. Maybe she doesn't see it. Sometimes it's like so ingrained that you don't even know what you're doing is impacting another woman like yourself to not show up at that stage. And so call it out, but not in a, insensitive way, but more of informing. And Siri, have a dialogue about it. Like, you have created this platform today to have this little talk back and forth. So the dialogue is like, you're not coming in figuring out all the answers, but more of like, I'm going to listen your point of view, what you think of me and what I should improve. So in that way, both the woman that has internalized this system and trying to cut down another woman like her versus the man, or, you know, the patriarchy in general, who is already at you, all of these things can come to improve if we have some sort of a space where we can all discuss things in a way that makes sense. So it's not like hitting each other head on, but more of, I'm open to where you come from. You know, I'm open to how or what make you see woman in this light, or how can I change this point of view, or what needs to be changed for you to see woman in a different light, or what have you. So those three things have to be front and center. And other than that, it's more of day-to-day pushes, little subtle things. And it's hardly ever like a knock on the wall where you say, oh my God, I was so excluded. It was right in my face. It is never that. It's about systemic tiny steps that make your visibility dead on arrival. And you don't even see it sometimes until it's too late. So those, recognizing those little things and catching them before they become like a systemic hurdle, that's my advice to you all. And I think it's a little bit beneficial also that the era you guys are coming up in is a little bit better than our era, even though that I'm not like 85, right? Because it's different whether we like it or not. So that can help in a way. And there is a lot of conversation when it comes to women's equalities, women's voices, right now, for whatever reason around the world, it has picked up. And so use this momentum to talk to each other, to build that dialogue, to push forward, to recognize those of us who have internalized this mind frame and trying to, you know, belittle each other, to stop each other from progressing forward. And so that's what I would have for you as an advice.
Thank you. So continuing on that same kind of same topic area, a question that we had is, how can we create areas of mentorship between former Oromo women leaders and upcoming young leaders? What are your suggestions? And do you know of any existing spaces that allow for collaboration? If there are none, how can we go about creating such spaces? And by spaces, I mean political engagement and mentorship spaces.
So that has been like a dream of mine since I was in high school here. I wished we had such a network. I wished we had a mentorship program like you're speaking of, but we don't. If I'm mistaken, somebody can correct me, but I'm not aware of that. We do have an organization that exists as a shell, at least International Oromo Women Organization or something rather, to have our own space. Sometimes we have to go at it alone to even be visible to the counterpart. So we are not built in that way. We haven't built ourselves or created that space that you're speaking of. So maybe if we did that and we mentored each other, for those of us who already have succeeded in whatever areas in their lives as a woman, as an Oromo woman, and come back and pull the rest of us out. And if we have that platform, and then we can use that platform to just come shift over to this side and challenge the status quo together. And so I understand the value of a single voice, but I also understand the collective bargaining power of women who are, or groups that are built to voice their concerns together. So I am not aware of such organizations right now. And if I am ignorant to that fact, I could be corrected and I would be part of that organization tonight. But as far as I know, I don't think it exists. Maybe the Obuleti is one example, a start of something wonderful. You should keep doing it, you know? But other than that, I don't see anything that is like legitimate in the international arena or even local, as in America or elsewhere, that exists solely for the advancement of Oromo women or the collective, as I said, bargaining of social, economic, or culture, what have you. So we don't have that. And maybe this is where it needs to go. As I said, if we have that power collectively together in one place and we create our own spaces, that existence itself is a challenge to the status quo. And people would come to know your faces, your skill sets, what you have to offer, and they would challenge the status quo. Why this wonderful set of Oromo women or Oromos in general are not known to the greater public, or that their contributions are not highlighted or whatever. So then you have an ally in that sense when you built yourself in a specific way. So maybe that's where we head to next. But if it already happened, I'm going to be presently surprised. If it didn't, that's where it needs to go. So we always talk about, how can we get a seat at the table? How can we make them see us? How could we included, in their space? But we never really ask ourselves, why do we even need that in the first place? You know, why can't we have our counter spaces and maybe they can come over at our table? You know, like, who said it was their table and not ours? You know what I mean? So that's maybe where we need to go.
Okay, so slight plug for Obuleti. Although we don't focus specifically on politics, although our focus is mainly on education, we do have a mentoring network where younger generation Oromo women can be mentored by older generation or those who have more experience. And me personally, I feel that collaboration and working together instead of creating more programs or more initiatives that are not necessarily already supported is kind of, it does more harm to us than good, in the sense that we're not unifying. We're just creating spaces to be different or be distant from each other.
I'm not saying that Ability is the best per se, but using us as an organization to build that network, or if you all already have it established. I know Amane said she messaged me and said she's working on something in that realm, but just making it so that we're included, that we're all included, that we're all on the same space or on the same field, so that when it comes to being able to break apart because one area is growing bigger or one area needs more attention, then it's a collaborative effort where there is support behind it, is what I would add to that.
Hi, everyone. Hi, Naju. Thank you very much. I came in towards the end. I was in a different meeting, but the part that I heard, I really appreciate it. Thank you. You did a wonderful job hitting all the important points, and thank you, Ability, for organizing this conversation. So I think also having these conversations and hearing from different people really gives us all an opportunity to see how we can be better within our communities, even though some of us have been there for a long time, some of us are starting, but still we're building our collective and we're building networks, so this is a perfect way to start.
Yeah. So somebody said, you told us that you are helping developing things from the background and your name usually doesn't appear until your name or until it is at the end of the product. By doing so, it seems that you give up your credits. What would you think about the community you are seeing and who sees you giving others opportunity, but you're not demanding to be seen?
Okay, so here's the thing, like that is one of those things that are very hard to explain. So as an Oromo woman, most of the time we think of collective efforts and the product that it, you know, brings at the end of the day and what that does for the people and if it can or, you know, should help whatever it is that we're involved in. So yes, we are conditioned to like not say, hey, put my name on here and this is where it needs to be and I did X, Y, and Z. Sometimes it's a collective effort. I'm not the only person whose name isn't on there. So let's say, for example, there's like 20 people who are working on one particular project. None of their names are going to be on there. I just happen to be one of the women in that group. So at the end of the day, you say, here's the product that we came up with and this is what it's used for. So it's, you can see it that way, but I can see it in a way that here we delivered this product that can help with this situation as a problem was there. And now there's this, you know, product that could be a solution. I don't give up my voice or my name or my visibility for anyone. I am the person that would say I would stand up alone in a, you know, sea of people to let you know that here is where I stand without fear or repercussion. So that's my personality. And maybe sometimes it, not everybody is in love with it, but that is who I am. But when I say you don't see my name, it's not like, oh, the one woman that's in there is not there. It's more about collective efforts. And when you are involved in things that have such a value at the end of the day, you are not, we are not going to like go through the list of names and say, and this person did this part and that part. We just don't do that. Maybe as a community, we should, you know, change that culture. And that would apply to the woman and man both involved in that project. So mostly we are taught to be like, okay, what can you do for this part? You take this part or that part. It's just more about how can we get this done as soon as possible so that whatever needs to happen needs to happen. You know, so it's in that regard. In other spaces, so demanding to be seen is a word that I wouldn't want to use because people can do nothing and demand to be seen. Look at the reality TV shows or whatnot. What have they done really for the world? Nothing, but they are in your face and they are being seen. What I believe as being seen is establishing a legacy. Whether my name is screaming at you right now or any one of us really, what you have done is part of your collective legacy. So someday you can sit down and write a memoir about it. Somebody else could do the same. What you have contributed would have a space in that society's history, in the oral history, in whatever history that whoever is watching it from the sideline can see how much you are involved in certain things and what your contributions are. So it's just, you can be obnoxious about things that you do, or you can build that legacy quietly, but your legacy is there, not to be messed with. The fact that you showed up, you are part of that, And, you know, people can write you being part of that project, regardless of who is at the bottom of the list at the end of the day. Is I see it as building legacy to be seen that way, or you can have your name on the project. It's either or. For me, I don't see that as an, you know, not, what do you call it? Not being seen or being silenced or erased in that way. I don't see it that way. Most of the time, like, people can be seen for shallow reasons or doing shallow things that don't have a lasting impact. You can have that. Or you can work hard, deliver what is needed, and have that legacy at the end of the day. So it all depends how you see the world, I guess. And I don't think that's like any one of us in particular. I think that women in general, whether it's like across cultures, class, and whatever, we tend to think of things in a collective way. And so that's just a frame of mind. It's a way we see the world. It's like a certain paradigm per se, not about elimination of voices or, you know, not demanding to be seen or what have you. I guess it's a good thing that we started this conversation, and I hope it's not something that is seen and then like gone. So we should keep this and conversations like this, keep going at it, challenge each other, push each other, build each other, and define our own spaces in the way that makes sense to us as a woman who is culture from a different places, and, you know, like that come with layers of identities as it is. And so, you know, create spaces that doesn't exist, strengthen those who are already here, and a bunch of other things like that. And instead of discussing why we are silenced, we should be able to discuss what to do about that instead. So solutions next, after the dialogue happens, what comes out of that. And it shouldn't be something that we start today and then forget about it tomorrow and pick it up only, you know, as a reactionary thing when something happens to us collectively. So that's what I want to see happen. Each one of us have things to improve, myself included. You know, people are messy. Things sometimes that you don't see can be seen by others, and that also helps in the growth process for you as a person, and how you also push others towards that same path. So this is basically what it is, and I thank you, Hawi and Oboleti, for allowing us to have this discussion today, and it means a lot to me, you know, for us to come together and listen to each other, learn from each other, critique each other, push each other, you know. All of these things are the collective effort of what, you know, how we carve our space of tomorrow and then generations to come. And so I wanted to say thank you for all of you for spending your time to listen to me ramble and what have you. So thank you.
Thank you, Najat. Mm-hmm. There aren't any other questions or comments, so we'll continue to end. Thank you all for participating in our webinar. This is part of our monthly webinar series relating to Oromo women's issues. Our topics are on a variety of things. We thought the political topic was really pertinent considering what is happening in our community right now and the current political climate, I guess. But we will continue to have these conversations. Us as an organization, we are willing to hear from you all about next steps, what we can do, and how we can continue to support you all, continue to have these conversations, or start ways where we can actually start putting out products instead of just talking about things. But I think what we as a team have concluded is that it does start just with the conversation at first. And continuing the conversation, and then an outcome can potentially come from it. So please continue to tune in, continue to join us. We appreciate you all being here today. And please be on the lookout on our next webinar series. And if you all actually individually are interested in hosting a webinar on a specific topic, career that you all are involved in, or issues that you feel are very important to our community and need to be addressed, please reach out to us at our emails, or contact me, Hawi, on Facebook or other social media pages, or Oboleti social media pages, or our other team members and just let us know in which ways that you can get involved. So I should add, Najat, thank you so much for joining us. It was great hearing from you and hearing your perspective and hearing kind of the things that you've had to experience. So thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for having me.
No problem.
Thank you for joining us on our monthly podcast. If you're interested in learning more about this topic or are interested in leading a conversation, please contact us on our social media outlets. Our handles are @opoleT on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and Snapchat. You can also contact us via our email or our website, which is opoleT.org. Again, thank you for joining us, and we hope to see you on our next podcast.